You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Welcome again to Occupation Station. I'm Diane Donato. Our guest today, Jim Notaro, RPH, PhD, founder and president of Clinical Support Services, CSS. And in addition to his role with CSS, Dr. Notaro is a former assistant professor with the Department of Health Services Administration at DeYouville College in Buffalo.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us first, just to get us started, help get us into the realm that we're talking about. Tell us a little bit about CSS Health.
CSS Health, in one short sentence, is a medication management software and services company. So we have at the core of our offering is a piece of software. You can think of it as an electronic health record for the pharmacist, and been designed to optimize a pharmacist review of medication regimens. The software is it's a web-based application, so sometimes for our clients, we'll use it if our clients don't have clinical bandwidth in their own organizations. Or if they do have clinicians who can do medication reviews, then maybe our clients will license it from us, and they'll use it themselves, and we'll support them in their medication management efforts.
So that's where you are, and you started this in 1999. Now we're going to backtrack and talk a little bit about how you got there. After you received your degree in pharmacy at ACPHS, you went on to get your PhD in operations research. So tell us a little bit about how the two areas together helped to shape your career path.
Actually, when I was at ACP, I was involved in this joint program. I was getting my pharmacy degree and my master's in health administration at Union. And in the summers, we'd have to take classes. And so unlike a lot of my classmates who were doing their internships in the summer, that wasn't really an option for me because we were taking classes during the day. So I went to to Gene Schneller, who was running the program at the time, and said, hey, you know, the courses aren't quite occupying my time. Is there anything else you have, an internship or something, you know, that might be useful? And he said, yeah, he says, as a matter of fact, I do. And he sent me down to the Health Research Council, which was a public-private effort down at the state health department that was doing things like evaluating primary care in New York State. Did we have enough primary care providers and those types of public health issues? And so I got involved doing that type of maybe entry-level statistical analysis and using the types of things that I was learning in the health administration program. And while I was working away, one day my mentor at Health Research Council, a guy named John Jack and Gene Schneller, were having a meeting, and I was there, and they said, you know, this is it seems like you take to this analytical stuff. Maybe you ought to check out a couple PhD programs. And so I think the PhD in operation research was just sort of an extension of this bent I had toward analytics. So I think that's probably, you know, pharmacy school it's pretty analytical, a little bit mathematical, not terribly mathematical, but very analytical. And operations research is an applied math field. And so I think what it did is it gave me a lot more formal capability to do some of the things that I'm doing now, to take some of the things that we learn in pharmacy school and apply them over populations instead of just to one individual patient.
Okay, so right from the start there, when you started to explain, I could immediately identify one skill set that you had, which was to take initiative and make your own opportunities because you asked for something more to do and then you found it. What are some of the other skills you would say are important to your day-to-day operations?
Well, I think you have to be curious. I think that's probably the primary skill. And frankly, I don't know if that's a skill per se, but I think you have to be curious. You have to want to learn why things happen and why things work and why things are going a certain way. And then I think the other thing you have to be is a little bit distraught, because if things aren't working in an optimal way, they have to concern you enough that maybe you want to change them.
That's very interesting, because we generally avoid adversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. But there's good adversity. There's I think, productive adversity.
When it comes to advice that you were given, does anything particularly stand out as being either good or even bad advice?
I think, you know, I don't know if it was implicit advice, but I think most of the people who I sort of had in my life as mentors especially at ACP, were people who allowed me to be a bit of a contrarian, to not do what everybody else was doing. You know, I remember there was a group of us in sophomore year who wanted to revive the student APHA chapter, and we worked at it, and then you know, had some good results, and we wanted to go to the annual meeting in the spring, and we went to the dean of the school at the time, his name was Walt Singer, and we said, listen, we want to rent a car and go to, I don't even know where, I can't even remember where it was. It was someplace like Georgia. So we wanted to drive to Georgia, maybe it was Atlanta, and we want to attend the APHA annual meeting, except we're not old enough to rent a car. And so he rented a car for us on his credit card, you know, something that today you just couldn't do something like that. And five of us drove to the annual meeting and back. And I would say that, right, that was, it was getting involved in things like that that weren't part of the path that were the most beneficial to me.
You have to be willing to ask sometimes, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you see for students today? What kind of advice do you give them?
Well, obviously, I give them advice about you need to be curious. It's not enough just to study the few things that I'm going to show you and ask you to read. So you got to be more curious than that. But the other thing that I tell them is that I think that learning, and I don't care how smart you are, right? I don't care if you're Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg smart. Learning doesn't come without struggle. So if you're going through a course and you're not particularly struggling at it, you're probably not doing it right. You're not really trying to understand the material as deeply as you need to. And so I tell them not to get frustrated, just to sort of keep pushing at it, because the learning is really a result of the struggle.
We're going to continue our discussion with Jim in just a few moments, but first, this message from Dr. Greg Dewey, president of ACPHS.
What does student-centeredness mean? Isn't every college student-centered? No, every college is not student-centered. There are some colleges that are faculty-centered. There are some colleges that are research-centered. Student-centeredness is not a given. But the student-centeredness is about putting the student first. And that's the lens that you have to have. So if you create a one-stop shop where students can get all their registration and housing and all these things done in one fell swoop, that's student-centered. It may require more manpower, may not be the most efficient thing, but it's student-centered. The student experience is the entire scope of things that happen to them throughout their years in college. It's not just about their classroom work. It's what happens inside the classroom, what happens outside the classroom. It's about the connections they make. It's about the networks they build. It is about their ease of registering for classes or their experience with clubs or athletics or how much they like the dining hall. Also about what happens in the lecture hall. So it's the whole spectrum of things. And it's our goal is to make sure they have the best student experience possible that will set them up for successful careers.
Welcome back. We're continuing our discussion with Jim Notaro, founder and president of Clinical Support Services. So let's take this to the workplace, because that's the ultimate goal. What are some of the strengths or aptitudes that you look for in your employees?
Again, I go back to curiosity and struggle. I'm much more interested in someone who's looked for unique things to do and then done them, right? If you're a new graduate and you come and interview with me, and the only thing that you can tell me about is, right, the assigned courses that you had to take in your program, to me, that doesn't strike me as very curious. So I want to know about, how have you attempted to use this coursework? Have you gotten involved with organizations? And, right, and there are certainly plenty at the College of Pharmacy that allow you to get outside of your coursework and apply some of the stuff that you've been doing and see how it works in the real world. I like people who intellectualize about things, who see things strike them as not quite right, and they have a sense of, you know, how you might start to incrementalize toward a better world. And then I like people who've had the struggle to get where they are. It seems to be an indication of resilience. And I think that that's a really big quality that you need in this workforce, because what we're getting to is a workforce that is more and more and more capable. And I don't think it's any surprise that just a simple act of going to college guarantees you a better wage than if you hadn't gone to college, right? That type of correlation, I think, is it's not a surprise. And it's because I think that the people who made it through a college education, they tend to learn how to do things that some other people don't learn how to do. And so as you see how our work is changing and how our workforce needs to change, if you're not resilient right now, our work is going to change. You see this in pharmacy right now. The type of work that we used to do is almost non-existent anymore. And if you don't have the resilience to sort of look at the world and change and adapt, then I think that it's not going to be a very comfortable future for you. And I think that that change is going to happen at a more and more and more rapid pace.
It does look like the workplace is rapidly changing. Do you have any advice on how to keep up for either students or for people who are currently working in pharmacy?
You know, I was back at the college once, and I was on a panel, and I was talking to a group of students, and one of the students asked me, said, hey, he says, what was the thing that you learned here at pharmacy school that has been the most enduring, right? The thing that you've been able to use the most in your career? And I thought about it, you know, a little bit, and probably most of the things that I learned in pharmacy school were sort of outdated the minute I learned them. But what I did learn at pharmacy school that I think has been enduring and carried me through is I learned how to learn, right? I really learned how to study and be able to take information and organize it in a framework in a way that made sense to me, in a way that I could apply it. I think that was the most critical thing I learned in pharmacy school. And so if I had to give a student advice, I would say, look, what you should be learning here is you should be learning how to learn.
Jim, what about being well-rounded? Even if it isn't all career related, but if you see that people are also taking interest in other areas of their lives, is that important?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, being too unidimensional is not good. But being not focused enough is not good either, right? And so, we sort of tend to think about people like Da Vinci and Michelangelo as Renaissance guys, but they were really focused on very specific things. And so I think that, this idea of wanting to be a good musician and a good painter and a good pharmacist and a good, right? I think maybe that's distracting versus being well-rounded. For me, what well-rounded means is that you can bring things from outside of your profession into your profession to make it better. I'll give you an example in my life. One of the projects I did when I was starting clinical support services, I got involved in this Institute for Health Improvement effort called Optum. I can't remember the exact name of it now, but the essence of it was optimizing physician office practices. And so we looked at patient flow through the office. We looked at the processes of how work got done in the physician office. And what I was able to do, you know, what was interesting to me is that I was able to draw so many analogies from that into what are we doing in the pharmacy. I think pharmacists probably, we still count pills on those blue trays. We're still packaging medications for patients in amber vials from the 1940s and 1950s. And we really have to look at our work and we have to look at our work in the context of the world. And to me, that's sort of the essence of being well-rounded, that you can incorporate things from other places into your work and make it better.
Jim Notaro, founder and president of Clinical Support Services. Really very interesting observations. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
For more information or to schedule a tour, visit acphs.edu. You can tune into all of our informative stories at acphs.edu/podcast. Each podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, and Spotify, giving you the opportunity to listen from a mobile device. Mark Occupation Station as a favorite, and you'll receive push notifications as soon as we publish something new. Occupation Station is also a proud member of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, the largest podcast content directory dedicated to the business and profession of pharmacy.